Save big on all your Halloween needs, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I appreciate authenticity. I do. It's why I like and appreciate and respect our next guest. Avinash Kunath, Right for Cal. That is the website, and it is the entity that covers Cal sports like none other. And Avinash is a really good follow on social media as well. He was the person who got up at O'Dark 30 as College Game Day was in Berkeley and took some amazing photographs of all the signs that are all around Berkeley, including some sign that referenced Larry Scott. That was my personal favorite. But there were a few others. The Cal fans showed up, and Avinash tweeted that day that nobody could ever say that Cal fans didn't care about football. And I'll offer as further evidence, it's not just people showing up at game day. The Cal fans are mad. They are mad after going 3-0, then losing four straight. They're mad losing close games. They're mad at the kicking game. They're irritated with Justin Wilcox as well. Avinash Kunath, Right for Cal, joining us now. Before we get into all this other stuff, can we just talk about the game day experience, because that feels like a real season high for Cal fans.
Yeah, I think, thanks again, John, for bringing me on. It was a definite high point, I think, for this fan base. We've been looking for a national moment for a pretty long time, and to get that stage, to get that environment, that sort of everything that went into that, the buildup, the sort of Calgarithm, everything our fans did to make that happen, and to see it all culminate with just that incredible show in Memorial Glade was a really gratifying experience.
Did you camp out overnight? Did you show up at like 3 a.m? How did you approach that yourself?
Well, my plan was just to show up and see what the pre-game day look was, to see if the students were lining up, and then I was wandering around. I was about to go back to my hotel, and then suddenly the students just decided to become, as I would say, ungovernable, and decided to storm the fence and, you know, basically cause an insurrection on the UC Berkeley library steps in front of College Game Day. So I decided to cover it all night, and I was basically posted up near the East Asian Library, just looking at the vantage point and just making sure that Fantifa was doing their part to keep the environment strong, you know?
I love it, man. The signage was, it was so exceptionally good that, and I sound surprised, but I'm probably not, I shouldn't be, because it's smart kids who root for a team, bringing their best effort and coming out for game day. But just the general atmosphere, what did it feel like? What was the kind of the pervasive feel as Berkeley finally got game day there?
Yeah, I think once we got the announcement, it felt like our entire community, online and offline, they were just, you know, pedal to the metal. Let's make this happen. Let's get as many people there as possible. We like talked with Bart. They started running trains early. The signs, I think there's a lot of brainstorming. I was with some of our community. They were passing out signs to students. So we had our, you know, the Calgarithm memes you've probably seen for a month. They were passing out those signs to students before the game. And I think there was just a big communal effort for everyone to show what Cal fans were all about. And I think our creativity, you've seen it over the years. It's just never really gotten the chance to get that national spotlight. And we brought the effort, we brought the noise, and I'm really proud of all the stuff they did together.
The game itself against Miami was sort of a festival, and then, you know, a really painful finish to that game. But You know, you walk away from the loss to Miami, or maybe the typical fan walks away feeling still kind of hopeful, or how? What was the feeling after the game?
I think it was like, as most people would say, the most Cal game day experience you can imagine, in terms of just like a lot of anticipation, excitement. Suddenly you're starting to dream about like what the season could take on by beating a top 10 team. And then you start to sit back into reality, the lack of depth, the injuries, they start to catch up. We're not able to rush Cam Ward, and you start to see like all the weaknesses that our team kind of displayed through most of the season catch up to us at the end. And then, you know, we're just hit with the gut punch of losing that game at the end, losing to Pitt, losing to NC State. And now we're kind of, you know, back in the same old paradigm that we've been with Justin Wilcox for 8 years.
The, you know, four in a row, frustration kind of boiled over, I think, last Saturday as North Carolina State comes from behind, kicking game woes. I saw Justin Wilcox's expression on the sideline in the final minute of that game, and he looked like he was in pain. The fan reaction on Twitter, it felt like there was a turn, that suddenly it was Wilcox needs to go. Am I reading that right?
Well, I mean, I think we've gone through the cycle once every year, I think, for the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, you know, Wilcox, you know, he finished 5-7, 4-8. You know, he was 3-6 last year before they rallied at the end. You know, there's always this October swoon where Wilcox and the Cal team just kind of struggles to, you know, win in conference. And it's been a pattern. Like, he has never started like the first three games of a season with a winning record in the conference. And, you know, he looks like he's on way to having another losing conference record. So I think it's just been boiling over. We kind of give him another chance because, you know, he has this long contract that kind of makes it hard to, you know, do anything else but hope that he figures it out. And NIL was a big part of the equation this year, and we kind of stacked the roster. But, you know, some of the same issues keep on popping up, and it's kind of been a troubling thing. And we don't really see like a we don't see the breakthrough coming yet. So we're kind of at a really frustrating point.
We're talking again. Right for California is the website. If you're interested, you should, in Cal Sports, or you just like good writing and reporting. Avinash Kunath is the fearless leader of Right for Cal. Let me ask you this: is Oregon to blame for some of this? Because here's my theory: Wilcox gets interviewed by Oregon. There seemed to be some sentiment of some Oregon players who wanted him as the coach. He told me at Media Day, he didn't end up with a job, Dan Lanning gets it, but he told me at Media Day there was a whole story behind it, and I got the sense that Oregon did offer him the job, but only him, not his assistants. They were going to probably put him with Kenny Dillingham and Tosh Lapoy and all the assistants that Dan Lanning eventually got, and that's just, when Wilcox was never going to take that job under those conditions. It just wasn't. He wasn't going to be able to bring his guys with him. But Cal swoops in. Does Oregon's offer cause Cal to extend Wilcox? Or is there an accomplice here?
I mean, we heard the rumors definitely about Oregon, and we were covering that pretty closely. It did seem like Oregon really did not offer Wilcox like a job that he would accept. A coach is not going to have right. Someone else choose his staff for them. So it was never really an actionable offer from Oregon. So it's possible that might have floated into the equation as to whether that contract extension was then inked. But I think this is a matter of, like, the Cal Athletic Department has had a bit of a free rein in terms of making very questionable coaching decisions over the past, I would say, 7 to 8 years, ever since Jim Knowlton took over. There's, you know, the hiring of Mark Fox, just kind of like letting the basketball team kind of wither away for almost 4 or 5 years before action was finally taken after it got so bad that it had to be taken. And, you know, Wilcox being given a contract extension fully guaranteed after a 5-7 season, it's just not something like a major athletic department usually does. It was kind of took us all by surprise that it was the years were that many, that it was that long. And yeah, it's kind of put us in a tough place where we have really no flexibility. And I think, you know, it's mostly on ourselves. Like we were last to the rung in ACC realignment, getting this like last minute deal with the ACC. And, you know, we just have a lot of internal issues that kind of fester when, you know, outside programs or any sort of an external force is put upon us. And we're just kind of like caught waiting. And I think, you know, the situation is not enviable. We don't really know what the best path forward is. We have a new chancellor who's very athletic friendly. So hopefully things change now that he's taken now the Chancellor Lyons is now part of the equation. But yeah, it's just there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment.
Avinash Kunath is our guest. WriteForCalifornia.com is the website. Cal's 3-4. You know, 4 1-loss games. You know, you're talking about 9 points away from a much different season. Is that lost on Cal fans when they see the 3-4 record, or do they go, gosh, we're so close. If we just clean up the kicking game, if we just make a play here, make a play there, a little more NIL money, I don't know. You tell me, is anybody looking at that going so close to being like, you know, a 6-win team?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are looking at it that way, but I think just the nature of the losses where there have been, you know, questionable coaching decisions, the offense continues to sputter for long stretches, the defense can't get a stop. I think it's just a pattern of, you know, not being able to close fourth quarter games. Like I wrote an article earlier this week about Cal's one score issues. We're 6-18, I believe, in our last 24 games that have gotten down to one score. And most of those games that we won were just us holding on for dear life. So there's a fourth quarter kind of anxiety with the Bears right now, where if they're in a close game, it doesn't feel like they have the confidence or ability to close. And it's sort of kind of festered down to not just, you know, the team, I think, but the community as well, where we don't feel confident if the game is close at the end. And, you know, I think Cal itself is, you know, struggling to make that breakthrough. And I think Wilcox himself is kind of trying to fumble around for an answer, but it does leave a lot of, you know, I would say not a malaise, but, you know, there's going to be not as much excitement for the Bears going forward unless there's a drastic turnaround or increase in performance.
What would a loss to Oregon State do to the psyche of the fan base?
It would be very tough. I mean, I know Oregon State has a good record, but the advanced metrics, you know, do not favor them super well. So Cal's, I mean, they should win this game on paper. But yeah, our offensive line has struggled, and we probably have lost our right tackle for an extended period, so it's only going to get even worse. And if you don't have a good offensive line, you can lose to anyone. We've lost to Florida State, who has not beaten anyone. We lost to NC State, who I believe that was their first ACC victory. You know, there's just not a lot of margin for error. So Cal's going to be in a lot of these close games going forward. I know that line's at 9.5 or 10.5 right now, but I mean, I would be very hard pressed to, you know, bet on Cal to be that ahead of anyone at the moment. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be a close game, and Cal's going to have to prove that they have the mettle to close, which they haven't had in the past few weeks.
Jim Knowlton, the athletic director at Cal, I thought when the Pac-12 was the Pac-12, he might have been the 11th or 12th best AD in the conference. I didn't like that he didn't seem to be as in tune or as, you know, as, how do I say this? He just wasn't on it in the way that some athletic directors of the programs that were really succeeding were tuned into it. And it, to the point where I don't even think he wanted to have a conversation about it, that he just felt detached to me. How does he play a role in this? Are his fingerprints on what's going on right now, or are there bigger forces working against Cal that no AD could overcome?
Well, I think it's a mixture of both. I think if you have the right athletic director at Cal, you can definitely compete. Like if you, I'm sure you've worked or talked with Sandy Barber. Yes. When she was at Cal, you know, top notch, hired Mike Montgomery, you know, was very good with the non-revenue sports, Jeff Tedford, obviously. I think if you have a good athletic director who understands the modern nature of college athletics, you can succeed at Cal regardless of the constraints put on it. It has happened before. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen. I think Jim Knowlton, Well, when he was brought to Cal, the Bears were kind of in a very like deep athletic debt. So I think the core concept the Cal was trying to face was fundraising, like raising capital for, you know, just in terms of revenue, fundraising, get donors in. And I believe he's had a very good touch specifically with the non-revenue sports like the water polo, soccer, swimming, all these things that, you know, are not on the purview of modern Olympic sports, but there's a lot of donors and people there. Who raise money for Cal Athletics and balance the budget. And we have this huge stadium debt that is going to be an albatross around our necks for quite some time. And I think Nelson's been very good there. But when it comes to modern stuff like realignment, managing revenue sports, contracts, NIL, all these things are above his pay grade or above like his knowledge, I believe. And I mean, I've heard the complaints, I've heard the issues. And you know, there's also the Terry McKeever situation where there seems to have been, you know, the Cal women's swimming coach who, you know, was fired for misconduct. There's been an internal investigation that's been ongoing, and he has been named as someone who, was potentially aware of it. Maybe it's unclear. The suit is ongoing, I believe, or the investigation is ongoing. So, you know, there's just a lot of positives, negatives, but for most part, for what Cal needs right now, it's not what we need. So I do believe he plays a part.
All right. Finally, the Pac-12 in its rebuild effort, there's been some talk about the potential for this Pac-12 group to make offers to some Power Four schools. The buyout for Cal and the ACC probably makes this a question that isn't even a question unless there was an implosion of the ACC. But is it working so far? Is the ACC working? You know, and I know it's too early to say definitively, but what are the early returns?
Well, I'd say from a community perspective, the ACC has been a very good fit. We've had nothing but good interactions with most fan bases, and I think it's been, you know, from a cultural perspective, you know, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You know, it's a lot of, you know, urban, you know, universities with good research, good academic fundamentals, which, you know, obviously Cal cares a lot about. I think the new Pac-12 as it's been constituted is going to be tough for Cal to fit in. If it comes to that, I'm not sure exactly what Cal's next move is if they are to move outside of the Power Four paradigm. It's not a question I want to really think about because that means things have gone horribly wrong.
Right.
But, you know, I think a lot of people, a lot of alum, a lot of fans think it's power or nothing. And I think if we're not like, you know, invited into the next round of realignment, we have to make some very difficult decisions about, you know, where we go as a program. And I think right now we're just trying to fight hard, raise money for NIL, help figure out like, you know, how to build ourselves as a community up, and, you know, just hope that like we can. I mean, for now, hope that Wilcox can turn it around. If not, think about what comes next. But, you know, we just have to kind of ride it out because, you know, we have a lot of proud athletic tradition. We want to make sure that we're moving in that direction. But, you know, decisions will have to be made if, you know, if we can't, like, force that internal change and start, you know, winning football games, winning basketball games, and competing at a high level. Because, you know, there's just, you know, too much at stake.
Avinash Kunath, writeforcalifornia.com. Hey, good luck to you. I'll be at the game. Say hello if you see me. I appreciate you coming on.
No doubt. Have a good one.
There he goes. Taking the temperature, taking the pulse in Berkeley. And his website's the best on Cal football, and it really does express kind of the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, and that has been Cal's season. Cal fans who see game day coming to Berkeley say, hey, it's great to be in the ACC. This never happened in the Pac-12. We're loving it. And part of the ESPN decision to go there might be driven by the idea that ESPN is a partner in the ACC network and a partner with the ACC. They're in partnership. So, you know, that doesn't hurt. It's the glow of the shoulder programming on ESPN's platform. But a lot of travel. Haven't got to the Olympic sports yet. Very low distributions. Don't see how it's sustainable for Cal, given their debt, given the expenses of playing in major college football and the travel. But I'm not saying the Pac-12 is the answer for Cal someday, but I won't be surprised if football splits away and a more regional option for Cal becomes available. Coming up, I will wax nostalgic. Leave it here.
Save big on all your Halloween needs, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA choice boneless beef chuck roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.